There was a young boy who went to his father on a Sunday morning and said, "Daddy, can we go to church today?" And his father said, "No, we're not going to church today. We don't believe in God in this house." A little bit later in the morning, the boy was talking to him. He said, "Daddy, can you read me a Bible story?" And the father said, "No, son, we don't read the Bible stories in this house. We don't believe in God." About lunchtime, the boy went up to his father again and said, "Daddy, can we say a prayer before we eat lunch?" And the father said, How many times do I need to tell you that we don't read the Bible, we don't go to church, we don't say prayers in this house. We in this house don't believe in God." The young boy went off to play and came back a little bit later in the afternoon. His father was sitting down in a chair watching some television. The boy crawled up in his father's lap and he says, "Daddy, you think God knows that we don't believe in Him?" I thought that was an interesting exchange between a father and a son, because it's difficult sometimes to get God out of the minds of people. I mean, educators have tried to remove God from our minds. Governments have tried to do that. Scientists have tried to do that. But God's just still kind of fixed there. In the minds really of most, God is still fixed. He is fixed in such a fashion that even when we're distracted and even when we're not doing like we should be doing and following God, we still know that He's there at some level. And I'm not talking about just us. I'm talking about people in a very general fashion. That's why the majority of people, anytime you take a poll, they'll tell you that they believe in God. They may have different concepts of what God is requiring of them, but they believe in that being, that supremacy that has existed in a different form and in a different time frame and fashion than all of us as man has existed. I want us tonight to, if the Lord permits us to open up four lessons that I want to do, where we're going to talk about God and introducing God, so that as we think about both ourselves and what it is as we try to reach out to others, as we try to influence each other, as we talked about in our lesson on prayer on Sunday morning, Paul prayed on behalf of those brethren he was praying to, saying that he wanted them not only to gain wisdom, but he wanted them to know God. And that's what he wanted him to see. He wanted him to have a relationship. And there was an occasion where some men went to one of the apostles and said, "Sirs, we would see Jesus." And that's all we want to do. We want to see God. And we're going to do that in four lessons by looking at His name and the things that are said about Him regarding His name in the Bible. And so we're going to start this evening with God's first name. I have no idea what that conjures up in your mind. I wouldn't think that it would conjure up anything except that I actually sat in a Bible class one time, not all that many years back, where they were having a discussion about Jesus and different things about Jesus, and they were talking about some of the historical factors about Him, where He was born, who His parents were, that kind of thing, and they asked what was His first name. And the response was that it was Jesus. That's what He was named. He was named Jesus, but when they were asked what was His last name, the teacher was the one who said His last name was Christ. You know, that was His first and His last name. Well, we're not talking about God's surname as if He has a first and a last name. We're talking about the first name that is used of Him anywhere in Scriptures, how He was addressed first. And I think that there's a reason that He was addressed that way first, and that's the first word that is used, and that's the word Elohim, as it's used in the Hebrew. That's the word that, though there are a lot of people that don't believe in the one God, the true God, that's what 1 Thessalonians talks about. And I would tell you, as Christians, that's what we adhere to. We adhere to a belief that says we believe in the one true and living God, as Paul addressed those brethren. You remember that as he was addressing them in that chapter, he said he was so glad that they had turned from idols to the true God, to the true and living God. And that's the God that we want to talk about. We want to just see some different things about the names that are used for God and some of the things that we can learn about those names that are used for God. This first name, Elohim is the primary name for God in the entire Old Testament. It's used some 2,500 times in the Old Testament. It is used 32 times in Genesis chapter 1. If you turn to Genesis chapter 1 and see the way that our scriptures start out for us, the beginnings of all things, in the beginning, God. That's that word, Elohim. It's used some 32 times in this first chapter as it's talking about God creating the heavens and God creating the earth and all the things that are in the earth and creating mankind. I think that's intentional, that as you look at this, you're looking at the creative God. It's a plural noun. There are other passages that tell us. If you look in verse 2, as a matter of fact, it says, "The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters." There was both God as we think of the Father. The word that's used, Elohim, is in reference to that entire Godhead and the creative powers of that Godhead. And the Spirit of God was moving on the face of the waters. And when you turn to John chapter 1 and verse 3, we're told that God was in the form of the Son, Jesus Christ. And it says that there was nothing created that was created that wasn't created through Jesus Christ. And that's why when you read about the creation of man, it says, "Let us make man in our image." But I think that there's a reason for all of that he wants us to understand this word Elohim as the first identification of God and all three of them together, and as it's associated with His creative powers. I think it's dealing with His omnipotence and things that He would have us to know about His omnipotence, things that He would have us to understand. If you turn to Job with me in chapter 38, you see that great discussion that God has with Job, where He starts questioning Job because Job has had some major issues in this dilemma he has faced because of all of the things that he's been suffering through. And so the Lord is going to answer Job. I don't know if you've ever thought about it or not, but I'm not so sure it would have mattered what the Lord says. I mean, if the Lord sits you down to talk to you, that's got to grab your attention to start with. And that's exactly what He does with Job. And we read starting in verse 4, Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurement? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst forth and issued from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band, when I fixed my limit for it and set bars and doors, when I said, this far you may come, but no farther, and here your proud waves must stop. Isn't that a great description? When God says, when I created all the oceans, where were you, Job? What part did you play in all of that? And when the oceans want to crash forth, and I said, this is it right here, that's your limit. As proud as you are and as much as you want to crash, these are the limits that you have established. God, the Elohim, the omnipotent one, the one that is involved in the creation of the world, would have us to understand certain things. The writer of Hebrews says, by faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the Word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. Think in terms of, before we get to the next section, just think in terms of, for a moment, of the nature of speaking something into existence as God does, this omnipotent Creator. For what purpose is all of that done? What is it, when we see the word Elohim and we think the very first place that shows up, it says, Elohim created the heavens and the earth. What should that conjure up in our mind? What kind of response should that be? If we're helping people to know God, and if we're knowing God ourselves, what should that elicit in us? I would tell you that God has absolutely no equal. When we hear the word Elohim, we should stand in fear and in awe. And what we need to be doing is taking a God to the world and showing a God to each other that is a God that is deserving of that reverence and that awe, and those who are careful when they come into His presence. Have you ever just stood somewhere that just amazed you? nature-wise, amazed you. You know, standing, as I've mentioned, I've never been to the Grand Canyon, but I've listened to people talk about standing at the rim of the Grand Canyon and just looking at what's before them, the sense that they get from that. You know, or the first time that you've ever been up high on a mountain and understood something about the mountain ranges and what was there, or if you've ever, which I've had the both the joy and the fear of experiencing being out in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico in a boat that is dwarfed by the water that is around you and by the waves that make your boat feel like it's just this large, and you feel absolutely insignificant in the world. Have you ever felt that way? Seeing something of God's? He says that's the image He wants conjured in our mind. Not that we don't have any significance to Him, but that He is the all-powerful God, the one who has spoken these things into existence. Look at Isaiah chapter 40. In Isaiah chapter 40, starting in verse 25. To whom then will you liken me? Or to whom shall I be equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these things. Who brings out their host by number? He calls them by name, by the greatness of His might and the strength of His power. Not one is missing. He says that's what should be called to mind. That's what we should think of every time we think of the word Elohim, or when you read, for God created the heavens and the earth. Have you felt the power of God? Have you seen the power of God? How far do you have to look to see that? You ever seen this scene? Or one like it? You ever watch lightning just strike and just absolutely destroy something that it strikes? You know, and you read about that, and you find out that it's like when it hits a tree and it superheats the sap of the tree and explodes the tree because the sap is boiling. Instantaneously it does all of that. And I look at that and I think, all the power that is displayed there, the God Elohim just spoke that power, and that's only a fraction of it. Just spoke that into existence. You know, when you see things like volcanoes and the eruptions and the enormity of the power, when Mount St. Helens exploded, my brother lived in Washington at the time, hundreds of miles away from that volcano, hundreds and hundreds of miles away from that volcano, and yet their cars were covered with ash, and the soot and the ash fell for, it seemed like, he said, just forever. It just took forever before that all fell out of the air from that one volcano exploding. And all the power, can you imagine how much power is generated in that? You know, all that water falling over Niagara Falls and powering all those generators and generating all that electricity. The God we serve, the Elohim, is the God that just said, Niagara Falls, let it be. And there it was. Isn't that incredible? He says that's the image that we ought to have in our mind. That's the God that we serve, His power. His name, it isn't only powerful, it's sacred. That's why it's so important that when we speak of God in the right manner. God talks about in His Word what happens when you take His name and you use it lightly and you use it in vain. And He warns about that in Exodus and Psalms and other places. You can't diminish the name of God. There's no way I could speak the name of God and diminish God. He can't be diminished. Not from who He really is, but people's perception. People's perception can certainly be changed. When Hitler was in his prime of power, it was a name that struck fear into many, many people. He was a madman. We understand that. And he did things that were just so heinous. But But his name struck fear. And it was interesting what they did by way of propaganda to try and change some of that. He was held up as a person of ridicule, as a person of no power, of no intellect. Because if you could get people to diminish what they thought of him, then they react differently toward him. We need to make sure that we're not using God in any manner that lightens his name. And I'm not talking about cursing, using his name in vain in that fashion, but how important is it that when anybody speaks of God, that we show the proper reverence and that we say the things that show people, you know what, this is a God to be feared and a God to be revered and a God before whom we should stand in awe. That's the God that we want to show people. And I think that he says that's the God who Elohim is. That's why over and over again is it tied to his creative powers. But not only his creative powers, the fact that he created what he did ought to help us understand something about trust and control. And helping us to understand who he is and how it is that he's accomplishing the things that he's accomplishing and how God is in fact the one who is in control of all things. You know, we sing sometimes songs like he's got the whole world in his hands, but sometimes we wrestle with that concept because it just doesn't look like that. We understand that. We've talked about that before. Solomon, when he wrote Ecclesiastes, wrestled mightily with that concept. And he said, as long as you're looking at the things around here in the world and looking at it from that perspective here in the world, he says, you're always going to think that. You're always going to think, you know what, it doesn't seem to be in God's control. It's just topsy-turvy. Everything's going the wrong way. But this Elohim, the fact that he created all the heavens and the earth, he tells us he also sustains them. Can he not sustain us as well? In Acts chapter 17, when Paul is talking to all of those philosophers in Athens, that, you know, and they're worshiping all these different idols and gods, he gives us information that ought to help us understand the ability of God, that even with our finite minds, should we be able to understand that God is the one who can and who does control the things that are around us. Read with me, if you would, in Acts chapter 17. Starting in verse 24, God who made the world and everything in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. And he has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth, and has determined their pre-appointed times and boundaries of their dwelling, so that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he's not far from each of us. For in him, look what he says, for in him we live and move and have our being. Isn't that a great passage? He says, do you understand that the God, how could we ever doubt that God is in control? How could we ever doubt that he can control what's going on in our lives and that he can help us to get through anything that we might face? If it's the God who is Elohim, who has demonstrated the ability to create just by word and created the heavens and the earth and all of those things that are in the heavens and the earth. He's made us. How could he not? How could he not also take care of us? He says that's what we need to help people understand about the God that we're seeking to show them. That he's the God of all power, of all control, and he can not only provide for them the protection and the power, but can provide for them the direction and the control in their lives as well. We should understand some things about his purpose. That he didn't create all of this without some kind of purpose. Even as he created man, did he have purpose for man? Just listen to some of these statements. We won't turn to each of these, but in just as far as general purpose, these are passages that are familiar to us. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, he tells us that he desires all men to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. In John 3:16, we know that he tells us, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but should have everlasting life." In 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 9, he tells us the Lord is not slack concerning his promise. He says, some count that as slackness, but the Lord is not slack concerning his promise. He's long-suffering toward us, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. Over and over again in those verses does he say, there's a purpose for man. There's something I want for every single person, no matter how bad they may seem to us. God has the same goal for every single person, and that's salvation. He says, understand that. That's my general purpose for everybody, and you need to grasp that. But look at Philippians chapter 2, because he gets more specific of those that follow him. In Philippians chapter 2, he talks a little bit about his purpose for us, those that are his children. Starting in verse 12 of Philippians chapter 2. Therefore, my beloved, as you've always obeyed, not in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you, both to will and to do for his good pleasure. He says, understand, God's got a purpose, and that is to have you submit your life to him so that he can work through you. He says, it's God who's in you to both will and to work according to his good pleasure, to do the things that he needs us to do. He gives us the ability, he gives us the responsibility to do the work that he's promoted. And he says, you need to understand that we're not talking about just somebody that's associated with us, but the God, the creator of all things, Elohim, the one that is omnipotent, all powerful, all sustaining. He says, this is what I want you to do. How could we not seek to fulfill the purpose of God? We sing things like that. We will in just a moment. We'll sing specifically the song, "Have Thine Own Way, Lord. Take me. Use me any way you can. Any way you want. All I want to do is be a part of your purpose in this life. I just want others to know you. And I want to know you myself. And I want to be used in any way that I can." In Peter, he talks about what God has done is that he's put a seed in us. That's the nature of coming to him. And when we're baptized into Jesus Christ, he said there's just kind of a seed put in us. It's an incorruptible seed, and we hold the very seed of God to grow into who he wants us to be. He says that's who's done that. The creator of all is the planter that has said, I will help you grow into who you need to be. He's got the power to do that because he's the all-powerful God. He can create and recreate in us as well. He is a God that helps us to understand it doesn't just stop with the creation. You know, he's never stopped creating. God has never stopped creating. Physically, maybe. There's not a new earth being created here. Things are growing, and we understand that, and things die in order that things can grow, and we understand all of that process, but I'm not talking about that. Remember David in Psalm 51 saying, "Create in me a clean heart, O God." I have to tell you, this one to me is one I keep coming back to. And this is the one I want others, especially as we think about those in the world that have never given their lives to God. This is one I want them to understand. If God can create the world, God can recreate me. He can make me a different person than I was before. He can take anybody's life and make them into something different. Make them into something special. Help them. David understood. He had just committed adultery with Bathsheba. It was going to cost his son's life. It was going to cost the lives of others in his family. And there were going to be all kinds of repercussions that came from that. And David understood, I've got to go back to God and say, God, start over. My heart is dirty and I need you to create in me a clean heart. Make me a new person. That's what God tells us He does. When you look at 2 Corinthians, and He tells us that when we've been baptized into Christ, He says we become a new creation. All things, He says, are new. Is that not a fantastic message to take to the world? You know, sometimes we look at the world and we have a tendency to look at the world that's similar to us. But you know, if we get active with the gospel of Christ, God said the majority of people who are going to be interested are the people that are hurting the worst in the world. The people whose lives are fouled up. People who have gone the wrong direction. And that's the message that I want to make sure that everybody understands. God can take your life no matter who you are, no matter what you've done, and can recreate you into the magnificent person that He wants you to be. Wow. That's beyond, you know, we talk about the gospel means good news. That's beyond good. That's great news. I'm so thankful that God could take my life that was headed one direction and say, I can make something different of you. He can do that with anybody. Why? Because He's the God that created the whole world, including all of us. How can He not recreate if we allow Him to recreate? How can He not sprout that forth in me so that I come up in that brand new, incorruptible, blameless, He says, person that He wants me to be. We can do that. That's the God that we serve. That's the Elohim. That's the God, the true and the living God. And that's the first name that God's used, and it's the most generic that is used of Him, but there's a reason I think that it's attached to all that creative mode. That's the first name that's used to introduce us to the God that we serve. Creator of all. So when you open up your Bibles and you read, in the beginning, God, what should that conjure up in our minds? The omnipotent, creative God who can do with my life what He wants if I allow Him, because He could do with the whole world what He chooses. We serve a powerful God. An awesome God to be feared. And that's the God we want to take to the world. Let's make sure that we're exalting His name and holding Him up so that the world can see the greatness of the God that we serve. There's three other names we want to look at, and they'll get more specific in attributes of God. But I think it starts with this one. None of the other names really would make the same sense if we didn't start first with the omnipotent God, the all-powerful Creator of all things. That's the God we serve. If that's not the God you serve, we would beg you to take care of that this evening, that you would do even as the song says that we're about to sing. Let Him have His way. Let Him have His way with you. Have your own way, God. Take me and do with me what you want, because all I want to do is submit my life to you. That's what He's asking you to do if you're not a Christian. Take care of that tonight. If you don't know how to do that, talk to us. We'd love to share with you how He says to do that from His Word. Share that with you. For those of us that are Christians, May we just not grow lax. May we make sure that we understand who the God is that we serve, and every breath that we can when we're out in the world, let them know the greatness of the God that we serve and exalt His name and do all we can so that the world doesn't have a diminished view of the God that we serve. If we can help you tonight, respond to God. Let us know while we stand and sing.